This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome. Well, I was hoping to make this show today a raptor-free zone, possibly the only one in the city, but I do want to touch on the question of economic impact. First, there is this business of so-called surge pricing, or what some people would call gouging. Is it okay? Yesterday, one of our news anchors, Maria Madden, had made an arrangement to go out with a group of friends. They went ahead because, obviously, hard to get a spot at a sports bar. They finally found a place, one of, I'm told, a bunch of places, and her friends called her here and said, yes or no, $50 minimum spend in a bar for a big group. And apparently that was the deal in a lot of places. So is that okay? And also, what is the impact really on the city? Because we've had the leaders of the Hotel and Restaurant Association and the Downtown Business Improvement Area, and they were big boosters. But according to an academic from the Ivy Business School, even though sports-related businesses may see increased sales, the effect on the city as a whole is negligible. And this whole thing will have no real impact on sales tax revenue, incomes, or employment. And that is apparently based on studies of events like the World Cup and the Olympics. So I guess the question is this whole thing overblown? Let me give you the numbers, 416-360-0740, toll free 1-866-740-4740. And right now, I would like to bring in Toronto City Councillor, former Toronto City Councillor, John Burnside, John Capobianco, Senior Vice President and Senior Partner of Fleischmann Hillard, and a conservative strategist, and former NDP MP, Andrew Cash. Welcome to you all. Thanks for joining us.
Bye, Libby.
Happy to be here.
Okay, let's start with John. Is all of this overblown, and are we pumping up the economic impact that John Capobianco, the economic impact of this?
Well, it's an interesting question, Libby, and I'm a firm believer in the capital market and supply and demand, and I think that, you know, obviously if there's supply, there'll be demand, and that'll control one or the other. But look, you know, there's choice. So if you have to go to a restaurant and you're obviously, you know, they've given you this $50 cover charge story about, you know, having to sort of a minimum spend, you could easily say to them, no, thank you, and go somewhere else. Now, I would imagine that the restaurant or the bar that they've went to was probably close to Scotiabank Arena.
No, John, it was at College in Ossington.
Oh, geez. Well, within the catchment area then.
Okay.
If they went to Etobicoke, then they wouldn't have a problem. But no, I guess, look, I think it's not right to do it, but I guess businesses, you know, feel that there's a lot of tourists who would otherwise pay the $50 and, or at least, you know, spend more than the $50. But I've been in New York at times when, you know, depending on the weather and the time of the season, a cab driver will come and they won't let you in the cab unless you're prepared to spend $100. And, you know, and if you say no, then they're going to drive off and find somewhere else. So I think it exists. It's not right. But I think people have choices and they can make a choice to go somewhere else.
Okay. Well, again, like the word was, you know, that if they wanted to get in somewhere, bird in hand. And John Burnside, what do you make of that?
So I have a little bit of a different take, Libby. I mean, emotionally, everyone would say it's not right. But logically, I don't have a problem with it in that if you are traveling on an airline, there's essentially surge pricing. Going to a hotel, the busy season, there's surge pricing. And certainly nobody ever complains on a quiet night when a bar runs a special or they have a happy hour. So everyone's okay with the discount when they're not busy, but they always have a problem when it is busy and they have to pay a surcharge. So logically, I just don't have a problem with it.
Okay. Andrew Cash.
Well, I feel like I have to jump in there and defend the small businesses of the riding that I once represented and hope to represent again. Look, first of all, from what I understand, your friends were asked if they were going to spend at least $50 there.
They had to spend at least $50 there.
Right. And if they weren't going to, then they'd have to go somewhere else. First of all, I have a great amount of respect for small business people who are taking the risk of running a bar or a restaurant in Toronto. I mean, this is a tough business. So, yeah, when there's a huge event on, you need those big nights in order to cover for the nights when there's two or three people in the restaurant. I don't think they're jacking their prices up necessarily. I think they were just trying to assure that they needed to get maximum out of this particular special night. And I think let's just give these small business folks a little bit of a break here. I don't think that's gouging necessarily. And you know what? There would have just as likely have been other bars and restaurants in the area that they could have gone to. And frankly, if you're going out with three people, chances are you're going to spend at least $50 anyway.
Well, yeah, that's true. But I don't know if they were trying to be on a budget. I'd like to give the numbers out again. You know, people, what do you think? Is that okay?
And I don't know if it was widespread last night either.
I think it may have been. I would imagine that it was. And, you know, there's a limit to the good news, because if you're in a restaurant, there's only so many people that you can accommodate.
Well, sure, I would imagine the hotels probably increase their hotel room rates as well as a result of the influx of people who are not only locals who were staying downtown because they felt they were going to be partying last night, but also others who've come from other parts of the world to come and watch the game.
Okay, well, I guess that's something that will have to be sorted out. I mean, did the tourism industry get a boost? Were there more hotel rooms? It is, after all, June, and it even looks like June today.
Well, by the way, there are studies out there that show that overall the arts and culture sector brings in a considerable amount more in terms of revenue, in terms of GDP, than our mega sports events in right across Canada, which is something that I think would surprise many people.
Well, yes, absolutely. We actually got a note about that here. You know, we were spending a lot of time talking about the Raptors, but it is arts and culture, which is our wheelhouse. It really brings
absolutely.
brings in more money, but this gets a lot of ink. That's why I'm asking people, and I'll, before we move on to the next topic, I will give the numbers out again. Is this whole thing overblown, including the potential economic impact? 416-360-0740, toll free 1-866-740-4740. And that's the question, people. Is this whole Raptor thing getting a little overblown? I'd like to turn to other things. And this for me is a real head scratcher. And I'm kind of wondering what the point is. The city of Toronto is back in court, taking the province to court over that move to cut city council to 25 seats. So what's the point of that? It's done. The election happened. And I gather that even if the city wins, and it's a complicated legal argument, then the province can just do what they threatened to do and invoke the notwithstanding clause. And John Burnside, you lost your seat in that election probably because of the way the riding kind of was split. What's your view on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a total waste of time and money at this point. I mean, sure, you can win the argument, but you will, to your point, lose the war. The council, when I was there, we made the decision at that time to fight it in court. But now that we've had an election, council's been reduced to 25 members, I think it's time to move on. However, I will say, I believe the problem is that a lot of the councillors who voted to fight it in court were returned, of course, their incumbents. So now for them to backtrack and say, well, we don't want to fight. Nothing, the facts haven't really changed. The province could always invoke the notwithstanding clause. So they're kind of in between a rock and a hard place. Probably the mayor should have introduced a motion to say, let's, it's time to move on. But we'll see.
Yeah. My impression is that the mayor and others are happy with this smaller council. John, how do you think it works?
Yeah, I think so too. And notwithstanding the fact that my good friend John Burnside lost the election as a result of this, and we lost good people like him on council, but the fact is, I think it's working. I think the mayor will be the first one to tell you that it's working, and that it seems to be, the meetings aren't going nearly as long as they are. So, you know, it's just by virtue of it being City Hall, the meetings go long. But I think things are being done a little bit quicker. Decisions are being made a little bit quicker. Staff don't have as much requests that they would in a 44-member council that they do in a 25-member council. And quite frankly, and more importantly, I think, Libby, Torontonians have moved on. It was a battle back then. The election was had. People are now dealing with a 25-member council, and I don't think any Torontonian wants to see this fight back in the public eye.
John Burnside, do you think it's working well?
Yeah, well, not so much for me, but absolutely, John. Well, yes and no. John did make a good point that staff now don't have to answer to 44 and what would have been 47 members. I wouldn't necessarily say that the fact that decisions are being made more quickly, I think that's a bit of a red herring. Whether it's a 2.5-day council meeting or a 3-day council meeting, that's very much inconsequential. The biggest problem with City Council, when they said decisions weren't being made, it was that they were made and then they were changed. David Miller brought in Transit City, Rob Ford brought in Subways, and John Tory did something else. Had John Tory lost, I'm sure whoever would have won would have changed as well. So it's this constant change when you have a change of administrations that really has led to the delay in things getting done, not the extra day, half day in council. Although, as I say, John did make a good point about staff not spending all their time just answering silly questions by a lot of councillors.
Questions. Andrew Cash, I'll let you.
Yeah. Well, this is interesting. With the greatest respect to John, I don't really get the impression, certainly where I am, that folks in Toronto have moved on, not necessarily feeling that that city council is functioning fantastically. Look, in my riding alone, there is likely over 20 significant developments in various stages, all of them needing public consultation, all of them having residents with significant questions, all of them begging the question about transit infrastructure. These are complicated files, and that is just one part of what a councillor needs to do. And the fact that the city, the bureaucracy isn't fielding as many questions, well, does that not suggest that the voice of the people perhaps aren't being honored and attended to because there's frankly not enough time in a day for a city councillor? I will also underline the fact that, Mr. Ford said this was going to save money when, as we all know, that all council offices' budgets increased because they had so many more constituents to represent. I think this whole decision, without putting too fine a point on it, has been an attack on local democracy. And the fact that my honorable friends here are saying, council staff don't have to answer to silly questions anymore. To me, that gets to the nub of it. Why is a resident's concern a silly question? And you go out there and you talk to residents about some of the issues that are of real concern to them and the frustration that they can't get attention and can't get action on things is palpable out there.
So just to clarify, Andrew, I didn't say any resident's question was silly, quite to the contrary.
Sure, but the questions but the questions that get fed to council staff are those largely that are coming via the representation. That's what a city councillor is doing. The city councillor is representing the community and trying to do the best for the community.
Respectfully, you know, I was there 4 years, so I think I have maybe a little bit better of an idea of what a councillor does, respectfully. Can I just finish my point, Andrew?
But can you think just that a councillor can properly represent double the amount of constituents that they had before?
Okay, so if you please don't interrupt
me. I'm sorry
about that. Yeah, no problem. I actually was not in favor of the cut. So let's just be clear about that.
But
what I am saying is John made a good point. And when I say about silly questions, when I say silly questions, I'm talking about reports and questions when people aren't paying attention. There were about half of the questions, it seemed to me, were just repetitive. There are a lot of good questions, a lot of valuable reports, but anyone that's involved at City Hall would tell you that there was a lot of nonsense. Now, I think the point that you made, which is the best point, is that is that every part of the city is different. So the area that you are in or were in, I think, is Joe Cressy's area. Extremely busy, and you definitely
Anna Bylov.
Oh, Anna Bylov, she's wonderful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very, very busy. Absolutely. Unfortunately, government is always a one size fits all scenario. If you look, I had a councillor friend out in Etobicoke who probably had about a quarter of the calls that I did. Mm-hmm. And so where you are, absolutely, you need that representation. Where I was, I would say the same thing. We had development, we had traffic, we had all these other issues. Some parts of the city are like Sleepy Hollow, and government has a very poor track record of addressing specific needs. It's a one-size-fits-all, and ultimately, I agree with you, just not on some of your points.
Okay, I just want to make a point to our callers. Please be patient. I noticed some, you know, giving up. We are going to get to you on all these issues. Right now, we've been talking about the fact that City Hall, the City of Toronto, is back in court against the province fighting that cut of the number of city councillors to 25. I thought that ship had sailed. But here on our panel, 2 out of 3 people agree with me. And Andrew Cash says, no, keep up the good fight. The numbers to call 416-360-0740. Toll free 1-866-740-4740. A couple of interesting things at Queen's Park. There seems to be a feud between Kiefer Sutherland, famous actor from a famous family. He tweeted to Doug Ford. Doug Ford mentioned Tommy Douglas, his grandfather. Tommy Douglas, the man who brought us Medicare. Doug Ford mentioned him in a tweet, and Kiefer Sutherland shot back saying, please refrain from using his name. You, sir, are no Tommy Douglas. And then John Burnside, another tweet from Lisa McLeod.
Yeah, she got into the fray and essentially said it's a harder job being a politician than an actor pretending to be a politician. And look, I have no issue with the original tweet from Doug Ford, and he was trying to bring light the fact that, you know, if you want to save those programs, those social programs that are valuable, you're going to have to look at other areas. And, you know, he invoked Tommy Douglas, who was very fiscally prudent. That said, what Lisa McLeod did is she essentially, like, I should say Kiefer Sutherland, his tweet was all professional. He wasn't tweeting as an actor. He was tweeting as the grandson of Tommy Douglas. She then made it very personal and brought in his profession. And I think that's really beneath certainly a politician, let alone a cabinet minister.
John Capobianco?
Yeah, I hate when these things happen, when sort of actors and you know, Hollywood movie stars tend to jump into the fray, especially American ones who are, well, I shouldn't say in the sense of Kiefer Sutherland, but, you know, I'm just talking specifically.
You know, I think he considers himself American.
I know, certainly, but I think it's, you know, we've seen a lot of those who have come in and played significant roles in Alberta with respect to the issue of oil sands and the pipelines and all, and trying to get into all of that action. And, you know, it just muddies the water, and it gets people frustrated with politics in general. And the people that lose are the politicians, because, you know, they'll always watch movies and they'll always revere movie stars in some way, shape, or form. But the politicians are the ones that get maligned and get muddied in these kinds of fights. But the whole line about, you know, you sir or no, Tommy Douglas, or, you know, or inject name, that we've seen over the course of the last number of years in this case, it just never gets anywhere. So I just wish they wouldn't do it. I wish they would just refrain from those kinds of things and move on to just keep working on public policy issues.
Andrew?
And yeah, let the movie stars do their own thing and do movies.
Well, you know, many people on Twitter took the premier to task over that comment. First of all, there couldn't be a greater difference in terms of political core ideals than Doug Ford and Tommy Douglas. And you know how Tommy Douglas achieved, who, by the way, was an NDP premier of Saskatchewan and then the leader of the NDP. And it's nice to hear some folks talking about how he was well known to being fiscally prudent. But one of the ways that they achieved that was by properly taxing the wealthiest corporations and making them pay their fair share. Now, that is not something we're going to see from Doug Ford. I think Doug Ford was using the image, the iconic image of Tommy Douglas to obscure really the agenda that he has, which has got nothing to do with fiscal prudence and everything to do with paving the way for privatization and making sure that corporations don't pay their fair.
But was it the right thing for him to do to take on the premier? He's
sure.
An American.
Absolutely. And, well, listen, I think that, you know, first of all, Doug Ford spent many years working in the United States. I think he has a lot of American friends. He also thought that it was a good idea to bring Fox News to Canada. So I don't think that's the issue. I think that, listen, Kiefer Sutherland is the grandson of Tommy Douglas. I think, you know, his legacy is important to his family. I think family members have every right to speak out. And I think the point here is that many people spoke out about this comment, but because Kiefer Sutherland is so famous, his is the one that gets, noticed. And I think, Let's focus on the fact that Doug Ford invoking Tommy Douglas is one of the most absurd things you're going to ever hear in this political cycle, where we've heard a lot of absurd things.
Okay, so we were talking about the Raptors games earlier, and in some of those Raptors games, people would have seen these really quite something ads, attack ads against Andrew Scheer, part of a campaign from a progressive group, and it's called Sheer Weakness. They're showing him as a bobblehead. What do you think of that, John Capobianco?
Well, I think the unions are back at it again, is what I think. They are, they've done it provincially for a number of years, a number of elections, and they're obviously engaging at the federal level, but you know, one of them is clearly a union. Unifor was the one that advertised, is one of the advertisements. But don't you find it kind of, you know, funny that they were back-to-back ads, Unifor, and then right after that was the Engage Canada ad, which is another one of those third-party groups trying to do it. But you know, I think quite frankly, the Conservative ad was far more effective. I thought with the one that played up the whole Trudeau, you know, not fit or just, you know, not as advertised ad, I thought was much more effective.
John?
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem with the third party advertising. And I know in the States, they're one of the concerns the Democrats have is that they're not getting out in front of the next presidential election, that the Trump and all his allies are advertising nonstop, and the Democrats are sort of worried about their next nominee. So, I mean, it's smart politics on both fronts. And I think it also goes to show that people aren't so sure of Trudeau being reelected. That's what it's all about. If they thought he was coming back with a majority, the Unifor and Engage Canada wouldn't be spending the money, but they're nervous.
Okay, let's take a call from Bob in Etobicoke. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
I'm a Ford supporter. I'm a conservative because I like things the way they were. And I don't agree with taxing corporations any heavier than they are. The reason, when you tax corporations, it's not like a person. It's a business. And that business does not really hold money. Any money that it gets in profit, it either goes to the tax department or it goes to the shareholders. And most of the shareholders in corporations are pension funds. So if you tax a corporation, who are you really stealing the money from? You're stealing it from the pension funds.
If you tax, you're not stealing. But Bob, have you seen those anti-Andrew Scheer ads?
I will be an Andrew Scheer supporter because I definitely would not ever vote for what I see in the corruption that we have now in the Liberal government. But I don't agree with it. People got to give him a chance. I like what Ford is doing, and I like what Trump is doing. He's doing something for the individuals. I want the country to be as I remember it, as my grandfather remembered it, as my kids remember it. I don't want.
Good luck with that, Bob. The country has changed a lot,
well,
and it's changing all the time.
But has it changed for the better?
In some ways, I would say yes. I would say yes in some ways, not in others. Anyway, Bob, I get where you're coming from. Thanks so much for your call. Okay. So, but on the subject of these attack ads, I guess you'd call them, the other polls, some polls are showing that the Liberals maybe have stopped the bleeding. Andrew Cash, do you think that? Do you think Trudeau is really in trouble?
Well, you know, I think anyone who says they've got the answer to the next election, well, I think we can stop listening to that person. You know, 4 months is a long time. Anything can happen. I mean, who would have imagined that at 6 or 8 months ago, Trudeau and the Liberals would be in the situation they're in? I can tell you, though, I've been doing a lot of door-to-door knocking for the last couple of months, and I have been surprised at just how soft their support really is. And I think that in some ways, you know, when you project this image that you are going to do politics differently, when you raise people's hopes the way Mr. Trudeau has done, and then you don't deliver on your promises, and you also kind of show that, you know, you're just like any other politician out there. I think that the disappointment is even greater than just the regular, the regular disappointment people have with politicians. So I think that they have, you know, a lot of issues to deal with. You know, they backed away on some significant electoral promises, many of which, by the way, were NDP promises, particularly around democratic reform and the purchase of the Kinder Morgan pipeline for $5 billion of our dollars without ever once saying that's what they were going to do. You know, they were supposed to be climate champions. Instead, they bought a pipeline. These are the kind of things that I think, certainly for progressives in Toronto, they're looking at and really scratching their heads and wondering, wow, I thought this was going to be way different.
Yeah, and, this is not a big thing, but a small thing. Yesterday, Trudeau announced this coming ban on plastics. And when he was asked what he himself had done in his household to cut down on plastics and the plastic water bottles, he couldn't quite figure it out. And then he finally said, oh, yeah, those paper boxes. But he came across as somebody, I think, who was kind of out of touch.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if I were Justin Trudeau, I'd be firing my advisors. John Capobianco is an expert on advising people and politicians, and he could probably do a better job of explaining it than me. But certainly, you know, there are 3, 4, 5 questions you know you're going to get at a news conference, and you better have the answers to them. And I'd say that was one of them.
Yeah, Libby, I'm with John on this. I think that. that you have a major announcement on the environment, you know, and I think that the Q&As that one does, or the briefings that most politicians, not least of which, of course, the Prime Minister, would go through, would be, okay, so let's do some mock Q&As here, and what the media might ask you. Number one would be, so Prime Minister, how do you fulfill these promises at home? Would be the number one question that what you would think would be asked. So there is some issue there, but I also want to go back, Libby, and just talk about the polling, the issue you were just talking about. And I tend to agree with Andrew on a lot of what he was saying with respect to, no one could ever imagine or guess what's going to happen 4 months from now in politics. A week is a huge amount of time. And I would say that the trend and the narrative are key indicators of how things are going to go. And I think the trend for the Liberals has been going down, and you say that it's been stopped, but I guess it probably has for a bit. But also the narrative, I think, has changed with Justin Trudeau and when he came in, and this hope and opportunity and optimism and I'm going to clean up things and I'm going to make Canada a lot better. That never materialized, and I think people have seen that. And then things like SNC-Lavalin, I should say, issues like SNC-Lavalin and the resignations of the ministers all played to a very negative narrative that has chipped away at the Prime Minister, that has been slowly chipping away, that started probably at his Indian trip, and just has gone considerably worse over the course of the last year, a couple of years. That's the trouble, and that's what I think people are Andrew talks about, the softness of the vote. But polls are always just a snapshot in time. But consistently, those polls have shown him going down, and that should be troubling for the Liberals.
Okay, and speaking of SNC-Lavalin, today the CEO announced that he is stepping down effective immediately, and that effective immediately is pretty unusual for a company like that. So perhaps there is more to come on that front. We're basically running out of time. John Burnside, what should we be looking for on the federal election front?
Well, I think the big point is who would replace Justin Trudeau. My mom used to say it's better to, the devil you know than the devil you don't know. And we've seen from Jagmeet Singh a less than stellar performance. I think he's totally out of the mix. And dangerous to predict, I get it, 4 months out, but I still think he's been very weak, and he's been consistently weak. He's not just had a bad press conference. And in terms of Andrew Scheer, people still don't know him. I think he better define himself a little bit better than he has, and it's not acceptable just to be against everything Justin Trudeau does.
And Andrew Cash.
Well, whatever's going to happen, it's going to be surprising, I think. And different. I think this campaign, we haven't totally settled on the ballot question, obviously, this far out. I think the issue of climate change is going to be a bigger issue in this election than it ever was before, and probably bigger than anyone's expecting it's going to be. But the fact that, the question of are people's lives different? Has this government changed your life for the better? Are things better for you than they were 4 years ago? I think that's an important question. And I think notwithstanding the sort of prognosis on Jagmeet, I think that he's got a huge amount of potential. I think he's been improving, and I think we're proposing some really bold ideas that I see the Liberals playing catch up on. The single ban plastic. Hey, we announced that 10 days or a week before, and then all of a sudden the Liberals announced it too. So it'll be an interesting campaign. I'm really focused on Davenport, which is where I'm running, and things are exciting there.
Okay, well, we'll be checking in with all of you again. Thank you so much, John Capobianco, Senior Vice President and Senior Partner at Fleischmann Hillard High Road, John Burnside, former City Councillor and business owner, and Andrew Cash, NDP candidate in Davenport. Thanks so much for that.
Okay. Bye, Libby. Bye, everyone.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.